Bryony, and it's great to be speaking to you this evening, not least because by speaking tonight, it made me not have to be one of the ones who got in the tank. So I'm very thankful to be asked to speak tonight rather than go in the tank with those guys who were so brave and hopefully have warmed up a little bit now. So this evening we're carrying on in this series of Join Us in Building Community, which is our vision for the whole year. And particularly in the evenings, we've been looking at these letters to the big city church. That's the letter that we're looking at over this time since the beginning of January is Corinthians. So I'm just going to kind of bit of a recap on what we've been looking at over the last few weeks. So if we remember that the church in Corinth was a church that Paul knew really well. So Paul is writing these letters, and it's a church that he knows and he loves. He was there for a year and a half. He planted that church. He loves them. But he hears that there's a lot of problems going on. And he writes this letter to the church in Corinth to help put them back on track a little bit. And he talks about five kind of main topics, about division and sex, about food, and those are things we've looked at over the past couple of months. And then he moves on to a period where he talks about the gathering, how this church meet together and what they do in those times. And then he finishes by talking about the resurrection, which we will come to after Easter. And what Paul is basically saying, that in these five kind of huge, big areas, the church in Corinth are just not living out what they believe, that actually faith works itself out in every single area of life. And that's not what the church is doing. And he loves this church. And so this isn't written as a reprimand. It's written as a father who loves this church and wants to see it prosper. And we've been looking, and we kind of started last week at the idea of what it meant for them to gather. What did it look like? What was the purpose of people as they gathered as church? And actually, the problem was that people had been seeking a kind of spiritual experience. They were kind of quite rowdy in their gatherings. And we like a little bit of rowdiness in our gatherings, don't we? But I think, obviously, by Paul's tone, this had kind of maybe got a bit out of hand. People were prophesying really loudly, and no one was really looking out for each other. And last week, if you remember, I know a lot has happened, much snow has fallen since last week, but Mick shared about spiritual gifts and how these gifts that Paul talks about were not primarily just for them to feel good about themselves or to look holy and look spiritual, but actually these were gifts that were mainly to proclaim the gospel, to tell people about Jesus and to plant churches. And so Mick unpacked that, and it was a great sermon. I recommend you listen to that on the download about what it looks like to have these tools for the job. What does it look like when we actually use these spiritual gifts, these amazing presence from our Heavenly Father to serve the whole church? And so Paul, in that part of Corinthians, 1 Corinthians, talked about that, like these are gifts that you can use. And when community is functioning well, you will all use these gifts and it'll be great. However, Paul knows that community, and especially community where people have different roles, often equals trouble. And so tonight, we're going to be looking at a section that we're calling One Body. But because Paul knows that even though we've all got these gifts, and loads, it was amazing actually to watch so many people come to the front and respond last week saying, yes, I want a gift from God. And Paul kind of saying, it's great that you want a gift from God. However, here's the problems that you might come across if you're fully engaged in this walk as a disciple. In my final year of university, I went to Finland and attended a film school there. And our assignment for the 4 months we were living there was to film and edit a short film. And there was one particular day where we'd had a really long, long day of shooting. It was absolutely freezing, much colder than it was today, if you can imagine that. I think when we arrived, it was minus 28. And I actually snapped an eyelash because it froze. Anyway, that's an aside. I didn't need to share that. But it was this long day. It had been really cold. We were freezing. Everybody kind of just wanted to get home to our saunas, because that's what you have when you live in Finland, literally. And we'd... got to the end of the day and we all got home and we were really shattered. And the director, who's a really good friend of mine, and he said, no, we need to review all the footage to make sure we've got all the things that we needed. And we looked through it and we'd missed one absolutely key shot. Like, it was so important. This shot was joining two scenes up, and the whole thing didn't make any sense without this one shot, this one piece of film. And actually, each of the crew we'd all been picked to go to Finland because we were competent, because we were good at what we did. But each of us was totally focused on our own little bit of the job. And actually, it was even worse. It's one of those things, you know, like when you're at uni and you're doing a group project, and you know that the group project is really important, but also you know that your grades matter. And so you really want to, it's like, oh yeah, it's for the team. Also, I need to look good. And so actually what happened was everybody was focusing on their own thing, and we totally lost that big picture of what it was all about. And so I was in charge of lighting, and those shots that day looked amazing, even if I do say so myself. It was beautiful. But we'd missed this one shot that without it, the whole thing kind of just fell apart. And my friend Gary, our director, made us go back the following day, and we did that shot, and we all learned a lesson that day, that actually to remember to be part of the whole thing. And we all know kind of what it is like to get absorbed, isn't it? In that moment of, this is my thing, this is what I'm good at, this is my skill. And Paul knew that once people had accepted the gifts of the Spirit, like many of us did last week here, stood right in where I am now, he knew that we'd need guidance about how to use them in the context of community, how to make it work. And so let's just dive straight into this passage. And this is reading 1 Corinthians 12, 12 to 26. Just as a body, though one has many parts, but all its many parts form one body, so it is with Christ. For we are all baptized by one Spirit so as to form one body, whether Jews or Gentiles, slave or free. And we are all given the one Spirit to drink. And so the body is not made up of one part, but of many. I'll just pause there. Paul is reminding the church in Corinth that they are united in Christ, that Jesus' death gives us all freedom to be part of God's family. And Paul describes this family like a body, and we're going to unpack this as I go through this evening, that when we're baptized, we join this family, this body, kind of a group which knows no distinction, as Paul says, between Jews and Gentiles, slaves or free. So we're all in it together, essentially, is what he's saying here. And he goes on. Now, if the foot should say, because I am not a hand, I do not belong to the body, it would not for that reason stop being part of the body. And if the ear should say, because I am not an eye, I do not belong to the body, I've said that wrong anyway. Because if the ear should say, because I am not an eye, I do not belong to the body, it would not for that reason stop being part of the body. If the whole body were an eye, where would the sense of hearing be? If the whole body were an ear, where would the sense of smell be? But in fact, God has placed the parts in the body, every one of them, just as he wanted them to be. If they were all one part, where would the body be? As it is, there are many parts, but one body. I used to have a piano teacher, and she was a Christian woman and would have said that to anybody who asked, but she didn't attend church. And instead, she met with a few friends, people who also didn't kind of get on with church. And she said that her faith was something that was private and that she didn't need to be part of a church. But Paul is saying here that you can't really say that. You can't talk yourself out of the kingdom and out of God's family. Once we become a disciple of Jesus, we become part of the body. We can't claim, like my piano teacher did, that we're not part of it. But that's not something that I'm interested in. But more than that, more than just not being able to say we're not part of it, we're valued and we're needed. God has things for us to do and a place for us to fill. And this is all sounding quite nice, and we can all nod and say, yeah, that's a great description of the church. However, Paul continues and tackles how actually this body can really go into kind of dysfunction. He says, the eye cannot say to the hand, I don't need you. And the head cannot say to the feet, I don't need you. On the contrary, those parts of the body that seem to be weaker are indispensable. And the parts that we think are less honourable, we treat with special honour. And the parts that are unpresentable are treated with special modesty, while our presentable parts need no special treatment. But God has put the body together, giving great honour to the parts that lack it, so that there should be no division in the church and the body, and that its parts should have equal concern for each other. If one part suffers, every part suffers with it. If one part is honoured, every part rejoices with it. So for the people of Corinth who were hearing this analogy, it would have been quite a familiar picture. Many Roman speakers used this idea of body as a way of describing civic life at that time. And they would push this illustration a bit further and say that certain parts of the body had a higher status and were worthy of more honour. But here, Paul is saying the total opposite. That's not what the body of Christ is like, the church. No parts are better than each other. In fact, he's saying the opposite, that what we see as weak or unworthy are important and valuable. That he is giving honour back, where actually the society would have said, no, we look at the people who are clever, the people who are great auditors, the people who can do all of the stuff, and we don't honour the people who can't do those things. And Paul says, no, you've kind of got that all wrong. And I see the challenge here in this passage for us and how we function as a working and loving body together. And I see there's two specific challenges that I think God wants to bring to us tonight. Primarily, that there can be no competition and no comparison. So let's talk about competition first. Healthy competition is great. Wimbledon would be extremely boring without competitive players. Football matches would be a lot more quiet without competitive fans like Mick. I have a friendly competition with a dad at parkrun who pushes his son in a buggy at a very unsafe speed because I'm not slow. But and I have this healthy competition with him to see which one of us can come first each week. So actually, competition can help you raise your game. Competition can make you achieve things that you thought weren't possible. But competition can also be unhealthy. I don't know how many of you have visited The Cabin, the restaurant down in town that does... you're nodding, I think people know. But there is a competition there where you buy a stack of pancakes or waffles, it's 12 pancakes or 6 waffles. Is this ringing any bells, Mike? Have you never done it? I'm surprised. and basically, if you manage to clear the plate, you get a refund. So that's the challenge. Now, I'm pretty sure that anybody who enters this competition probably doesn't come out of it feeling particularly healthy. So competition can be a really positive thing, but it can also be something that is really unhealthy. And Paul is saying in this passage that competition is definitely not healthy in a church community wanting to use the gifts that God has given them. He says, the eye cannot say to the hand, I don't need you. And the head cannot say to the feet, I don't need you. The problem is that competition puts me in the center. Competition makes me want to be better than you. Therefore, whatever gift I've been given, I won't be satisfied until I look better than you. Whatever gift that God's given me. And then that can lead to comparison. And comparison, at its heart, uses other people's success and failures as a measure of how I am doing. We see this all the time, don't we, on Instagram. We're doing fine, but then we see a picture of Tom Skidmore on an exotic holiday somewhere. And we start questioning our life choices, don't we? Sorry, it was just too easy, Tom. It was too easy. We see somebody's sourdough and halloumi breakfast, and somehow our tin of soup feels like we failed. We hear Jacob Ward's amazing singing on this track, and I don't know about your youth, but are you feeling like a little bit, like, have you achieved anything, basically, in your life next to Jacob, hopefully being in the top 10, you know, by Christmas? We have so many opportunities, don't we, to compare ourselves to others, particularly in the world that many of us inhabit on social media. We see the opportunities that others are having in their careers. Or we hear about a couple who've managed to buy a house or go traveling, and we start to look at our lives and wonder kind of what went wrong. The main question in our mind when we start to fall into a comparison mindset is, am I valuable? Am I valuable? This moves us towards a belief that we are only valuable if we have certain things, if we look a certain way, or have particular gifts or talents. And we can start viewing people kind of like top trump cards. And we look at our card and we say, oh, well, they're like an 8 on how well they dress, but they are about a 5 on how polite they are to people. So I'm doing better than them in that area. And we can start judging people and rating people and comparing ourselves. And sometimes we can have this mindset of they are better or I am better. And it can feel like there's no middle ground. Paul says that this is a big problem in the church. We can't be the kind of church that Jesus needs us to be if we're competing and comparing. But it is so easy to do, especially, as Mick said last week, when certain roles or gifts seem to be promoted more. And we start to believe that certain gifts are more desirable or better, which of course was exactly what Paul was saying isn't true. Being a female in the church, I know a little bit about competition and comparison and what that can look like. When I started preaching here about 12 years ago, and sometimes people would say to me things like, oh, you're a really great female preacher or whatever. And it was like a red rag to me, to be honest, because I could feel this competitive spirit rising in me. Because deep down, I am a child. I'm the first child, 2 boys. I want to be better than the boys. I want to be better than the boys. And so therefore, I don't want to be put in some sort of subcategory of female preacher. That just makes me go like, okay, well, I need to be better than all the boys. And actually, when I first started preaching, I had to really work through that attitude of that competitive spirit. That the moment somebody said something like to me, it was like a competitive seed had been sown in my heart. And it's really easy in that place to start striving rather than accepting and using the gift that God has given me. Instead, I end up comparing my gift to others and wondering, can I spin this to make it look better? Or am I always going to look a bit inadequate next to that person? And I don't know about you, but so often I can get into this mindset of comparison and competition. And it's in every area of my life. Like, as a mum, it's easy to see really, like, together, yummy mummies and feel a little bit inadequate. Or I can easily start comparing what my child can do with other people in her class. It's so, so easy for me to see people doing amazing things for God and seeming to be used by him powerfully. And actually, my first response isn't yes. It's like, what is wrong with me? In those moments, my life can feel really small and not good enough. And actually, it's in those moments that I can find myself moving more into criticism. When I'm threatened, when I see something happening that's good, but that makes me go into this comparing and competing, that's when criticism can creep in. And we start to say, well, here's all the reasons why they're not quite as good as you think they are. Here's all the things, all the stuff that they're doing wrong, but it'll get found out in the end. Or we say like, oh, they're looking good here, but you want to see how they spoke to their kids last week. Like, we start to creep in with criticism when we feel under attack, when we feel like our sense of, am I valuable, is being questioned. Let me pause before I finish and ask the question, Where am I competing or comparing? Let me just pause on that where you think before I kind of move on. Where am I competing or comparing? So there's the problem. And it would be pretty depressing if I sent you out into the snow right now, wouldn't it? So the problem is that we are hardwired to make trouble when we're put in community. And Paul says no to comparison and to competition. He says there's another way. A way where everybody gets to play. Everybody gets to take part. A way that is different and that looks a lot more like a Jesus way of living. And I believe that God wants, and that Paul writes in these passages, that we're to move from this mindset of competition and comparison to a mindset of contribution and compassion. So contribution. So he says, in fact, God has placed the parts in the body, every one of them, just as he wanted them to be. If they were all one part, where would the body be? So as it is, there are many parts, but one body. A contribution mindset says we are team. It says I have a valuable part to play. It says, what's my job here? And I see this all the time with my kids. A contribution mindset that realizes that our contribution becomes more significant, makes us more significant, not less so. So when I ask my five-year-old to do something, and I frame the question, maybe slightly manipulatively, but anyway, I frame the question as, I need us to work together as a team, so can you help me with this? She is much more likely to help out. She is much more likely to be part of what we're doing because she knows that I value her, that I need her, that she's an important part of the team Wells. When I frame that question like that, of like, come and be part of this, we need you, it changes from what she's doing as just obeying the rules to her contributing to our family. And actually, the heart of becoming a contributor is, instead of asking that question, am I valuable? We start asking the question, where can I add value? You know, there are people in my cell group who volunteer to lead worship, and they can't play instruments. They would die if you gave them a microphone and you asked them to sing. But they come up with these amazingly creative ideas about how to engage with God through psalms and videos and activities. And I'm really glad that they don't refuse to do that because they can't lead us in a song. Our cell group is so much richer because they choose to contribute from the gifts that God has given them, rather than comparing themselves to others and thinking, well, I'm not Sam, so how can I possibly volunteer to lead worship? Actually, I'm so thankful that that's not what they do. And finally, compassion. Paul writes, but God has put the body together, giving greater honour to the parts that lacked it, so that there should be no division in the body, but that its parts should have equal concern for each other. If one part suffers, every part suffers with it. If one part is honoured, every part rejoices with it. Moving away from competition enables us to suffer and celebrate with each other. But having compassion means that we deeply care for one another. It also enables us to celebrate with each other without having it threaten our own identity. Paul was really keen for the church in Corinth to know that God's Spirit was available to work through everyone. But the church in Corinth wanted to have these powerful spiritual experiences, which wasn't wrong. We should definitely seek that. But Paul is using this letter to remind them that everyone needs to learn. And everyone needs to hear from God. When we're filled with God's Spirit and therefore his love, we are compelled to seek the well-being of others. We have compassion. We see others and we want them to experience the fullness of life and the fullness of the gifts of the Spirit that he has to offer. Compassion forces out comparison and competition. Because if I'm genuinely seeking the best for someone else, then I can celebrate when things go well for them or weep when things don't. with absolutely no thought of what does that mean for me? How does their successes and their failures affect my self-worth and my sense of being? And I don't have to have an identity crisis every time somebody does something great, because I can celebrate with them as I have compassion on them. And Paul's letter to the Corinthians really is one huge reminder about the nature of the gospel, about the gospel reality, that it is an announcement about Jesus that opens up this whole new reality, a way of living that says no to the default settings of the world, settings that actually would pitch us against one another, settings which make me feel inadequate, settings which would say there's only win-lose and there's never win-win. The gospel of Jesus says that we are better when we love. We are better when we walk together. That we are better when we take up the gifts he's given us, knowing that we are contributing to the whole story and not just our own. And tonight, as Jess and Bird shared their story, they were saying, this is my story, but I am part of a bigger story. I'm part of the story of the gospel, of how God is changing hearts and changing lives and transforming the world. And there can be no place for competition and comparison in that kind of world. And so what's the challenge for us tonight? I'm going to leave us just with two simple questions. Firstly, how can I challenge my competition or comparison mindset? Maybe the simple answer for you is tonight you need to come off Instagram. And if you went at the thought of that, you probably need to come off Instagram. Maybe you need to just remove yourselves from a time from social media. If that is the place of comparison and competition, if that is where a seed is being sown, just take yourself out of the game for a bit. And I know there's people on the staff team who have done that and have spoken about. I mean, Rich Goodman's read a book because he's come off social media at Lent. So, you know, the world is indeed your oyster. So there's lots of, like, amazing things that our team would talk about what God's done. Maybe when it comes to compassion, it comes to kind of competition and this comparison thing, maybe you just need to stop buying stuff for a bit. Like, maybe actually you're buying things to try, as you try and compare yourself with others. And I have a blog, and I did this project called Project 333, where I wore 33 items for 3 months, items of clothes, not like random, like, I don't know, kettles, like actual clothes. The 33 items for 3 months. And actually what I found was that it really challenged this thing of comparison, because I couldn't come every day with like new clothes that I'd bought. Like, so I had to like put to death that thing of comparison in me. Maybe it's about actively pursuing praise and actively pursuing to praise people that you feel a little bit intimidated by or tempted to compete with. Maybe today, maybe tonight, you need to send a message and say, like, that thing you did this week was awesome. That was really great, what you did. So what's that thing for you? And then finally, where can I embrace contribution and compassion? Where can I add value to my community? Maybe you could volunteer to host cell, or to lead worship like my friends do, where they make us do all sorts of strange things to help us engage with God. Maybe it's to kind of offer to like lead that time of sharing and things in cell group. Maybe it's about signing up to a team here or somewhere else. Maybe contribution will make you join the kids team. And actually, I want to honour, actually, the guys who do kids' work here. As a parent, it is amazing that these guys contribute like that. Because not only does it mean that my child has an awesome time at church on a Sunday morning, but it means I get to engage with God on a Sunday morning rather than chasing my son round and round and just removing biscuits from him. So actually, like, the kids' team, I want to honour those guys because they do an amazing thing, and that is they are choosing to contribute, just like all the youth team who give up their Friday nights. And I often stand on this stage and go on about the youth team, so I'm not going to do a total pitch, Liam. But maybe it's about contributing there, finding where's the place I can serve, what is my gift that God has given me, and how can I offer it, how can I give it. Maybe it's at work, like offering to step up and do something, offering to even just to make a round of tea. You know, maybe it's that, rather than sitting thinking, nobody asked me if I wanted a tea. Maybe it's just contribute, just offer that. And who is it that you can encourage today? Who is it that needs some compassion, needs your compassion today? Who do we need to just go alongside and say, actually, I want to celebrate with you, or I want to weep with you, I want to suffer with you, or I want to celebrate? Like, who are those people today? And how can loving them challenge our need to compete and compare? So I'm going to invite the band up now. And we're going to worship and just remind ourselves really of God's faithfulness and his goodness, and how we don't do this stuff out of a place of striving and out of a place of just trying to be good and trying to be good Christians, but we do it from a place of grace, that God delights in us, that he loves us so much, that it's grace that we even have these gifts. It's grace that enables us to be in a place to contribute, because God is a loving father who just loves to bless us and then say, go and do some stuff. And the main point of it is that people get to know about him. And people get to be part of church, get to come and be part of this and to meet him face to face and find out actually that they also can contribute, that they're also part of this bigger story.